Hello and welcome to The Slow Revolution, the podcast where we explore the pros and cons of slowing down in a world obsessed with speed. I'm Carl Honoré, your host, and today my guest is Guy Mishlin, a serial entrepreneur from Israel and the co-founder and CEO of a company called Eat With, which is all about bringing people together around the table to break bread. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you aboard. I'm a huge fan of food, eating, breaking bread together. One of my favorite strands of the slow movement is, of course, slow food. But I should probably paint the picture here a little bit background-wise. This interview is a morning after the night before interview, in the sense that I had dinner with you and 20 other people that I didn't know before in your headquarters here in San Francisco. And it was a lovely experience. But before we go into the details of that, I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit about, tell me what Eat With does in your mind.
Sure. So Eat With essentially is a marketplace that on one hand empowers hosts or chefs, whether they're amateurs or professionals. And on the other hand, he brings them together with guests, could be travelers or locals that want to have an alternative dining experience to a restaurant, a very social experience, where you come in and you meet other guests and your chef and connect around food.
Because you're not eating in a restaurant, are you? You're in people's homes or apartments,
right?
or other spaces, aren't you?
Exactly. So the original idea came from a travel experience that I had about 3 years ago. And I was traveling in Greece with my wife. And after many tourist traps, we were invited home by a local family for a Friday dinner. And it was by far the best thing that happened to us on the trip. We felt so welcomed, and it was intimate, and it was authentic, and they gave us tips on what to do during the trip, and we stayed in touch afterwards. And when I went back home, I said this was magic. It was the best thing that happened to me on the trip. And I started thinking whether there is an opportunity here to actually replicate these kind of experiences to other places around the world. And on one hand, to empower people like the woman that hosted us, and to allow them to earn extra money. And on the other hand, I knew as a traveler, I would definitely pay a premium to be able to eat with locals and get this very authentic and a great experience. Mm. And from there, the story basically started. We started in Tel Aviv, and we launched in Barcelona in 2013. And today we have over 150 cities on the platform, and we're serving both travelers and locals for what we call social dining experiences. And we're seeing how we literally bring people together every day around the world.
It strikes me as a little bit like Airbnb for food in that sense. Is that a little bit the way to think about it?
Very much the way it started. Mm. And to be honest, when we came up with the idea, Airbnb did a very big round, a fundraising round, and that's how we even started to think whether there's an opportunity here to disrupt an existing industry, which is the restaurant industry, just like they disrupted the hotel industry. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely learned a lot from what they have done. And we definitely saw them as a model and as an inspiration in many ways.
So for you, is it a business that will lead to an IPO one day, or is it also something less about numbers and more about maybe a vision or a mission to change the world, or make, how does it?
It's both. So it's a business, and it's definitely a business that we want to grow, and we have investors. So there's definitely the desire to make it as a big business. But we're a business with a very mission-driven business. So we see it as our goal, as our mission to bring the world together 1 meal at a time. Mm. And I don't know what your thoughts after last night's dinner, but I go to those dinners a lot, and I find it's magical and very inspiring to see how people that otherwise would have never met come together around food, and how the notion that food brings people together, it's working. It's working every day and every time. And we probably wouldn't be sitting here if we were not eating last night together.
No, that's right.
And this
right,
kind of serendipity, meetings happen all the time. Mm-hmm. And so to your question, we are a business, but we are a mission-driven business. So mm-hmm. we definitely see ourselves as a company that does good or have a good cause wants to change the world.
Well, I definitely enjoyed last night's meal immensely. I thought the food was wonderful and the wines were deliciously paired with it. But it was that social alchemy, bringing together people who were coming from different countries and backgrounds and who had never met. And just something happens when you break bread together.
Right.
There's something about that. And in fact, that English word companion is derived from the two Latin words for with bread, because it's when we sit down, break bread together, that we are most companionable, isn't
right.
it? And I stayed long after the closing time and walked home with a couple of people, and it was just a really joyous experience. So different from, I travel a lot. I'm guessing you probably do too. And as solo travelers, we often find ourselves, you know, snacking on room service alone in the hotel, or maybe dining at a chef's bar on your own with a book. And that has its charms, of course, but there's something different and something more maybe enriching and nourishing when you sit down with people and eat and talk. And this, I feel like there's a big market for that.
Right.
Do you see yourselves as part of a cultural shift going on? The fact that people are in a world that is so fast and where people are so distracted and so busy that we've maybe lost the art of those small, simple connections, the kind of connections we make around the table. And there's a yearning for that. And because of that, Eat With steps into a void and fills it?
For sure. So if I step back for a second and look at it philosophically, I think that the world that we live in today is as if we're all very connected, but in fact, we're very disconnected, because this virtual connection actually brings us apart as human beings. And we have less and less opportunities to connect in the real world with other people. And I commute every day to work and I take the train. And every day I look at that, everyone are on the phone. People just don't connect with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's sad in many ways. And I think at the end of the day, we're social creatures and we need this social interactions, the real social interactions, not the virtual ones. And so in this sense, I think that companies like Eat With and others that really bring people together in the real world and allow people to reconnect and to meet and create those social interactions, it's definitely an antithesis to what's happening today in the world. And I think in many ways it's something that we need as humans.
Mm-hmm. It's true, isn't it? It seems to be the paradox of the modern technology, isn't it? That it promises to connect us, but in many ways it seems to drive us apart or keep us alone together, that phrase. Or we've got 321 friends on Facebook, but when was the last time we sat round the dinner table with them and had a raucous meal for 4 hours, you know, with the phone switched off?
It's
that kind of thing. I'm interested in how the technology fits into the etiquette of Eat With meals. I looked at the rules on the website and you have suggestions on conversation and how to approach the chef and when to critique and that kind of thing. But there was no mention of gadgets. And of course, that's a big part of what you do with your... I noticed people whipping out their phones from time to time, either take photos last night or some people are just catching up on the odd email. Do you take a position on that, or do you let people just work out themselves how to cope with the technology and the screens around the table?
So far, we haven't really taken a very active position. We kind of like let every experience and every host to dictate what he wants to do. You don't see a lot of people using technology during the dinners. Sometimes they use it to take photos, but mostly people are very engaged and they use it to really connect. But going forward, we are definitely going to be more proactive in the way we are going to design the offline experience. It's definitely something that is very high on our priority list. And you can think about other ways that you can do, or we want to do as a company, in order to make sure that those interactions in the offline are maximized, or the probability of them being successful, and you walking out from the room and saying, wow, this was a very interesting person, I'm really happy that I spent an hour or 2 hours with him. This is something that we're working on right now, to see how you can actually leverage technology to maximize the probability of having a very successful offline interactions mm-hmm. and a successful social dining experience.
Mm-hmm. That seems to be a conversation going on in a lot of Silicon Valley startups, doesn't it? And in this part of the world, is how do we use the technology so it doesn't get in the way, so it becomes a tool to take us to where we want to be, which is to be in those social moments, presumably. Yeah.
Right.
Let's go back to your own biography and so on. You're Israeli. This idea got off the ground in Israel, in Tel Aviv. Is that right? Is that surprising to you? Is there something about Israeli culture that it has a greater affinity for the table and the culture of eating together?
So it is part of our culture. I mean, in Israel, every Friday you have those family dinners, and people are very close to each other. So you spend a lot of time with friends, and yeah, the communal table, the home table is something that you utilize a lot. And people are also very welcoming and warm. So hospitality is a big part of our culture. So yeah, I think it's a natural place to start.
Do you find yourself then coming to a country like the United States or the Anglo-Saxon world where maybe some of those traditions have withered a little bit and people are more alone and atomized in their way of eating? You know, you imagine the 2015 typical family, you know, the kid's eating in front of the TV in his room and someone else is, in, you know, balancing it with the iPad somewhere. That seems less a part of everyday life here. So do you find that it's a bigger leap to make the case in a country like the United States, where you're based at the moment?
So it's surprising. It's interesting to see. I did have this idea when we came here. I thought it would be different, and yeah, that we might have challenges. But it actually surprised me how enthusiastic and welcoming the communities have been where we launched in the U.S. and also in Europe. I mean, I know there are conceptions about the different countries in Europe, and but all in all, yeah, you find that people are very, very passionate about food. A surprising amount of people are actually want to open their homes and share their love of food with other people, to the point that we are today, we're basically having tens of thousands of applications from all over the world, including countries like Iran and places that I would never imagine. And people are genuinely passionate about sharing food and sharing their passion for food with other people. So at the beginning, yes, I did think that it will be more challenging. Reality is that I guess in every country and every city, there are enough people that are just passionate enough about food and about other people that are just opening their homes.
Is there a league table where some countries respond more warmly to your business plan than others, or is it just every country, every continent, you find lots of invitations coming through and requests?
So right now, as a company, we're focused on mostly on a couple of cities around the world, and but all in all, yeah, I wouldn't say that there is any particular market that stands out. We literally have applications from all over the world.
And what kinds of people, let's look at both sides of the equation, put themselves forward as cooks or chefs or hosts? Is it people who tend to be already professional chefs and are looking to branch out and do something different? Is it an enthusiastic amateur cooks? What kind of mix?
So essentially, it's a three-tier pyramid. We have celebrity chefs, which is the chef that you met last night is in a way a celebrity chef. So he has his restaurant and his followers, and he's a very well-known chef. We have amateur chef, which are people that have never been in the food industry, but they're very passionate and they know how to cook, and they went through our vetting process, and we found them qualified to actually host and be an Eat with host. And then there is a mid-tier of people that are in the food industry. They haven't made a name for themselves yet. They're working as sous chefs, or they have small caterings, and they just want to extend their business and to connect with their audience in a way that they can't do if they have just a catering job. So it's all the way from the celebrity through the semi-pro and to the all the way down to the amateur.
And what about the other side of the equation, the diners? Is it a particular age group, socioeconomic class?
The age group is actually all over the place. We do see some tendency for more women, as at least the women are making the dining decision. I think it's true for many things in life,
Not just dining.
exactly. But we do see
It's
that
safer
the
that way.
person that actually does the booking at the end, there's a higher tendency to for women there. And in terms of the audience, so we have travelers, which they want to have a more authentic and connected dining experiences when they travel. And then we have the locals. And with the locals, we see a lot of expats and transplants that want to extend their social network when they just move to a new place. We see a lot of foodies that want to experience a different dining experience, and they value the social aspect and the fact that they can connect with the chef who's there and he's telling the story, and you can ask him questions, you can step into the kitchen and see what he's doing, which mm-hmm. you'll never do in a restaurant. And then now we started also doing private events, which is essentially people coming to celebrate things as a group. And organically, they started to book the whole night for themselves, just as a better way to celebrate something, a much more intimate and connected experience. So essentially, we have all those different typecasts or different groups on the platform today.
Mm-hmm. And what about the pricing? Because one of the criticisms sometimes made, or observations of the slow food revolution, is that when you start creating food that is a very high caliber and it's prepared beautifully and served in elegant surroundings, then the price goes up and out beyond the reach of the average person. I was looking at some of the prices on the Eat With website, and I mean, let's be honest, people who are on food stamps are not going to be able to afford it, are they? Is that something that you think that's just the way the world is? Or are you thinking bigger term, longer term, that there might be room to widen out this offer to people who have fewer pennies in their pockets? I mean, I'm just coming back to that story, your origin story of the Crete family in Greece. Yeah. I'm guessing they were probably quite a humble family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very humble, very small apartment.
Yeah. So how do you see Eat With finding a way to bring that type of family, that type of diner into the sphere?
Definitely. So the prices today, you're right, they're not cheaper than a restaurant, and it's something that bothers me, and we're definitely working to see if we can have lower prices and at the same time make sure that the hosts have a sustainable business, or at least they're not losing money. What we found out as we started, that it's challenging to host few people or a small amount of people, charge low prices and actually being able to make money, because you don't have the economy of scale that the restaurant have. And if you're charging $10 or $20 and you have three or four people, and you usually invest hours in preparing the food because you're so passionate and you want people to have the good experience, then at the end of the day, if you take off the cost of food and you divide the amount left by the number of hours that you invested, there's not much left. So we are looking at ways to actually reduce the prices, like potentially helping the host with sourcing the food and things like that, because it's definitely something we have as our goal to reduce the prices so it will be affordable for, I wouldn't say everyone, but a much wider audience than it is today, because it's part of our goal. We want as many people to connect around food and to use the product.
Mm-hmm. So where do you see things going if you peer into your crystal ball? 5 years, 2, 3, 4, wherever, where do you want to be and where do you think you will be?
So we want to be first a global company. Today we are in about 150 cities. We still have thousands of cities to go. Mm-hmm. And we want to own and continue to lead this dining category, which we call social dining. So in our vision, in 2, 3, 4 years, whether you're a traveler or a local, if you want to go to a restaurant, you open up Open Table or Yelp. And if you want to have this social dining experience, you open Eat With, and you're actually going to this different dining experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to say, I'm definitely sold on it. I lost my Eat With virginity last night and I didn't wake up with any regrets in the morning. It was lovely. In fact, the second dish, it was prawns with grits.
Amazing.
Extraordinary. I went away thinking, floating on air for a start, but also wondering how can I make that myself, and which is always a good sign, isn't
right.
it, that you've really, the chef has hit a home run. Let me just finish off by asking you a very personal question about food. What dish has really knocked it out of the park for you recently? What's the most amazing thing you've eaten in the last few months?
So it's funny, the dish that I grew up in Israel is my mother's schnitzels. Okay. So my mother was visiting like a month ago, and
Jewish son.
Yeah, there, right? Exactly.
So name checking mom. Yeah.
I have to say that.
Yeah.
And everything was amazing. Every food, every dinner that I go to, or maybe I should say it differently. So I'm not a foodie. That's like a confession.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually intrigued by the social interactions and. Mm-hmm. What's so beautiful about the business, in my opinion, is those connections that are being formed. For me personally, the food is almost the excuse, so it's the baseline, it has to be great.
Mm-hmm.
in order to bring people together. So that's like a small confession. So yeah, all the dinners that I've been to in the last few months, they've all been great. 2 weeks ago, I went to a French dinner and the macaroons were amazing. The best one that I've ever eaten since I've been in Paris. And we have a guy who's a fishmonger and he does crabs and his crab is just phenomenal. So I guess, yeah, every one of our hosts is very, very special. He always makes a point to bring something that is very, very related to the past and their passion. So, and it comes across when you're doing something that, if you grew up in Paris or you learn cooking in Paris and you come and you do macarons and you tell the story behind that, it comes across. It's not just food, it's food with a story. And the same for this fishmonger guy who he goes and he gets the crabs from the market and it's all fresh and he tells you the difference between different crabs. And so it just gives it another dimension that if you just went to a restaurant and ate a crab, you just don't have this kind of experience.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering how I was going to bring this interview to a close, and I think you've show me exactly how to do it, because hearing you talk about the crab and the macaroons is making my stomach rumble. So I think that's probably a good place to draw a line and move on to the next meal. So Guy Michelin, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.